Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, of course, there is an ongoing issue with the use of AI in academia. Students use it to do their coursework, requiring their tutors to apply programs to spot what isn't the work of the student. But the AI improves and the programs improve. It's digital whack-a-mole. And we simply don't know how much AI-generated work is being successfully passed off as that of a student. Is AI gradually killing the ability to think? Juliana Edelman is an assistant professor of history in DCU and co-author of a piece in the journal about this. Good afternoon, Juliana.
Hi, thanks very much for having me.
I'd like, at the coal face of this, so to speak, are things coming across your desk and you're that go, this student is better than I thought they were, or this doesn't sound like this student?
Yeah, it's usually that it doesn't sound like any student you've ever received a paper from. Yeah, and I think all colleagues I've spoken to are seeing a huge increase in papers submitted that appear to be written or assisted by AI.
Yeah, and but can you do anything about that? Because you can't, you might suspect it, but you can't necessarily prove it.
Yeah, I'd say a couple of years ago when they first came out, it was very easy to spot and often easy to prove, because in my own discipline of history and the one that Roman, my colleague, and I were talking about, you know, you have to reference your sources, and AI was notoriously making up sources. It would just make up something plausible and put in a footnote or a reference. But it's no longer doing that. And the people who are using it have learned to amend their footnotes and their bibliography. And the plagiarism tools that we use to detect, you know, straightforward copy pasting, they don't detect AI. So we can be quite certain that a student has, you know, used AI, but it's very hard to prove that incontrovertibly. And so therefore, there's sometimes nothing we can do about it.
Yeah. So there's a danger there that people can maybe, I suppose at the end of the day, when they get to the end of the year, do they still have to sit down and do written exams?
So we reintroduced most exams in most places went away during COVID, and they were kind of slow to come back, because I think people teaching the humanities don't feel like a timed exam is maybe the best representation of student work. But we have brought them back. So, you know, each semester in each year of your history degree now, for example, you do have to do at least one written exam.
Okay. And is that showing up some inconsistencies in the work of
students? Definitely. Although I would strongly suspect that in some cases, people might be using it to assist them with preparation for the exam, you know, summarize readings, things like that. But yeah, I mean, definitely you would see students who you might suspect their essay on the basis of their exam mark has been AI and it has been overlooked. Yeah.
Are we being, and I mean, you do hear a lot about the, you know, the potential dangers of AI, yet all of us have access to it. And you know, my sense is that people are blithely using it without thinking the long-term effects of this on human intelligence for our ability to think for ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's my concern. I mean, there are lots of other concerns, ethics of how they created the models and the material they used to train them, the problems with resource use. But I think, yeah, I mean, in humanities education, our central concern has to be how they might potentially degrade human thought. We don't have a lot of studies on this, but it does suggest so far. There's one study by MIT that gets cited over and over, which had a relatively small cohort, but it did seem to show significant effects on brain activity when you use AI versus when you don't use AI, and when students spoke about the task that they performed either on their own or using AI, the brain activity was very different. So a student who did the task, you know, reading materials, writing an essay themselves without AI assistance, a lot more was going on in their brain. Mm-hmm. And really what we were trying to say in the piece, Roman Burke and I, was that, you know, college is the time that we want stuff to be going on in your brain, you know, making new connections, learning how to think critically, learning how to deal with large amounts of information that our world, I mean, AI is only adding to the amount of information that each of us has to deal with and process. And so if we're taking that opportunity away from students because they're relying on these tools, then we're de-skilling them. You know, we're not stopping that decline.
And also, as well, it would strike me the ability to research things, to have your own thoughts about sequences of events and interpret those, that would all be gone. Even do students routinely look up books even nowadays?
Yeah, so this is an interesting thing. I mean, we shifted a lot to e-books, again, partly driven by COVID, but also just because of library space and cost. Mm. So e-books, online journals are things we would regularly assign students. So anecdotally, you know, I would think that most students are reliant on online materials rather than on paper copies of books. And those are all presented to you. They, every single one of them, when you open, offers you a, you know, the either Adobe or the ebook platform offers you a summary, an AI summary. So
yeah.
Mississippi is breaking new ground for business at a historic pace. Amazon, XAI, Toyota, Milwaukee Tool, and GE Aerospace have all tapped into our deep talent pool, prime geographic location, and welcoming communities. This is bigger than megasites. Mississippi offers a thriving business ecosystem with affordability, greater collaboration with energy partners, and record-breaking speed to market. Looking to expand? Break new ground at mississippi.org.
Yeah.
But at the same time, anything that, you know, any historical account that's online can be wildly inaccurate.
What do you mean, any historical?
I mean, if you assign someone, you know, write an essay about the 1916 rising, right, and they could look up nonsense online and put that down.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's ironic that Wikipedia, I don't know if you're aware of it, the people who contribute to Wikipedia, they voted not to ban AI content. So now, when I started in university, we're spending all our time telling people, please don't use Wikipedia. But now Wikipedia is probably more reliable than a lot of websites because the material is not AI generated and it's generally referenced.
Yeah, and people are working to update
and
it the whole time
are
and
to up- it's
having
made by,
arguments
made
about
by humans.
It. Yeah. Who'd have thought?
Yeah.
Are we sleepwalking into a catastrophe?
I think we might be. And I think universities are understandably worried about sounding like Luddites and not, you know, and pushing back against. I mean, we're all reliant on loads of these technology companies for lots of things we use every day. And we want to sound like we're, you know, working in the 21st century. On the other hand, we're supposed to be training people to think. And if we don't start pushing back, if we can't protect the spaces that we are actually in charge of in terms of universities, schools, then, you know, I don't think we're doing a service to those students.
Yeah. So does that mean turning back the clock? And I don't mean that in a negative way, but, you know, say the model as it used to be 10 years ago. And can you do that? Because I suppose you can't. You can't stop students having laptops and phones and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, in the article, we suggested them some things like facilitating digital free spaces, you know, encouraging students to be present and read and work on projects in a space where they don't have access to those tools. So that at least, even if they're going to end up writing an essay with some assistance from AI at home, they've had an opportunity to develop some of those skills in person, you know, with the support of lecturers, you know, practice reading long, complicated documents rather than looking for summaries of them. And none of these things cost money. They're mostly time. And so I think there are some things that we can do. But you're right. I mean, they are ever present. We can't stop the students from accessing them on their phones, although there are probably ways that we could limit or restrict phone use and access to certain apps in universities. So those are things I'd be in favor of.
Yeah. And even in, I mean, for many years, third level lecturers have said kids are coming out of the second level system and they've just learned to regurgitate things rather than engage in critical thinking. Is there an argument for when students arrive in third level, particularly into the general areas of humanities, part of the first thing that they're taught to do is develop their critical thinking and then... And while you're teaching them that, set fire to their phones.
Yeah. I mean, we hope that we are teaching them critical thinking, you know. But I think it's, I mean, you can even see in class, like students get, and I notice this myself, you know, you're so used to having your phone and access to your phone. You get tetchy when it's not nearby. And you see students who can no longer survive a lecture or a 50-minute tutorial, even in a small group of people, without accessing their phone. And I think we need to help them as we need to help ourselves to, like, you know, be in the moment, try and engage with the people around you. I mean, that is as least as valuable as the critical thinking to, you know, to have those conversations with the other students. And
By the same token, are there, do you suspect or do you even know, are there lecturers out there using AI to mark papers?
I'm sure there are. I mean, I don't know of any personally. I'd like to say that the School of History and Geography in particular is, you know, particularly concerned about these issues. But I'm sure. I mean, and, you know, the quantity of students we have. A very high level of third level education in this country, which is fantastic. We have not matched that with a high level of hiring academics. And so our staff to student ratio is, you know, out of whack with the OECD average. So I'm sure the temptation when you're faced with 250 essays might be.
You could see
the temptation.
But at the same time, every day that passes, AIs develop. And even the people who built them originally don't know entirely how they work.
No, absolutely. And I mean, I think they're not that interested as long as they can make money out of them and they can extract our data from us interacting with them. And they can head towards this apparent artificial general intelligence.
Yeah. Now, at the same time, a lot of them, it's notable that so many of these tech gurus don't want their own kids to be exposed to them. So I'd like to know where they're going to send them to university.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that they're very keen on promoting the technologies and the use of them to the wider public, but then protective of their own spaces. And I think that should tell us something.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And within academia in general and third level, and is there, from your point of view, now, you know, you and Roman wrote this this piece, is there enough alarm about this?
There's a lot of alarm. I mean, I think you can't go to coffee or lunch with a colleague without this coming up. And especially during marking season when students are, you know, when we're dealing with lots of papers that we suspect have had the assistance of AI. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of alarm. I think there's just a lot of concern that we don't know what to do.
Yeah. Juliana, thank you so much for coming in and terrifying the life out of everybody listening. That was Juliana Edelman there, Assistant Professor of History in DCU and co-author of that piece that was in the journal.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.